Thank you for the kind introduction. My name is Peter Purgathofer. I work at TU Wien, and if you wonder, TU Wien is actually the official translation of TU Wien into English. I work there at the Faculty of Informatics at an institute called Visual Computing and Visual and Human-Centered Computing. We have a new name since a couple of months. And I'm going to talk about why I think that EdTech, whatever that is should be considered harmful. There's a long series of papers in informatics, something considered harmful. It started in the beginning of programming with GoTo, considered harmful, a classic paper in informatics that talks about the value of not using GoTo, but instead doing structured programming. And since then, many people have used the considered harmful part of a title to tell a story or something important. And I think this is something important. Now, of course, the picture in the back, which you don't see very much, that's not me. That's Vincent van Gogh in one of his famous self-portraits. And as almost everything in this world, we can make Vincent van Gogh into an advertisement for something. I'm not going to talk at length about the value of advertising. We could discuss that. I could talk about brand value and mutual benefit and things like that. But I'm not going to talk about that. I'm just going to put away the question mark and say, let's just assume advertising has a value. And the question that I then have is, if advertisement has a value in society for us all, does it have to watch us? Do we need an industry that lives off watching us watching advertisement? Does it have to watch me while I watch the advertisement? So, how does this work? We now know this is not some secret formula, but it works basically via something called a cookie. Cookie is information stored in your computer. This is a very simplified version. There are now dozen different types of cookies, super cookies, hyper cookies, unremovable cookies, canvas cookies, whatever. The information that is stored in the cookie is basically identifying you against other parties that can also read that cookie. And that way you can be tracked across the World Wide Web while you surf, while you look at stuff, while you use apps, while you use services. We always associate this tracking basically with Facebook and Google and Amazon maybe. But in fact, it's a really large industry. There are about 140 companies that are known that collect huge amounts of data about everybody and sell that data, whatever that means. We have a little bit of an insight into the sheer amount of companies that are tracking us when we go to web pages today after the GDPR, the DSGVO came into became active this summer. Suddenly many web pages show us who is tracking us, and I have one little piece of screen cap where you can choose to, at least for some of the trackers, to disable them. So there's an disallow switch, and I could switch it off, and that's what I try to do here, just clicking some of them, but the list is long. And so when you scroll, you suddenly see that that's a huge number of trackers. I counted them. Those are 56 trackers, just starting with the letter A. So that's a lot of, of course, a lot of the trackers have add something in their name, so A is some unproportionately more often used than other letters, but still, 56 only with the letter A, and that's a lot. Now, we could say, I don't care, I don't have anything to hide, let them track me. I have no problems with that, and as a person, you probably really don't have a problem with it, but I want to show why society has a problem with it. So let's take a small step and look at Walt Mossberg. So you know, two persons, the right one you maybe have seen before, the left one is Walt Mossberg. Walt Mossberg is credited by Wikipedia to be, he is widely credited with pioneering the modern consumer-focused technology review and commentary. He was for the longest time Wall Street technology columnist, then senior technology columnist, and when he stopped working there, he founded some quite interesting media on his own, All Things D, Recode, and D, and Code Conferences. So Recode is one of the publications, and Recode was dedicated to producing quality journalism on technology, which is quite the goal to set yourself, because the World Wide Web is full of less quality technology journalism, let's call it that way, especially quality technology journalism that is financed by some interest group, for example, by the producers of technology. And in one of an interview he gave, he talked about something that happened to him when he talked to an advertiser, somebody from a marketing company. And I asked him if that meant that he'd be placing ads on our fledgling site. Recode didn't really ever become very popular. He said yes, he'd do that for a little while. And then after the cookies he placed on Recode helped him to track our desirable audience, because that's a very specialized audience. People interested in quality technology journalism. You can make your own thoughts about what that means that the people are. So if the cookies helped him track our desirable audience around the web, his agency would begin removing the ads and placing them on cheaper sites our readers would also happen to visit, which they would know about by tracking. In other words, our quality journalism was, to him, nothing more than a lead generator for target-rich readers and would ultimately benefit sites that might care less about quality. That's a very nice way to put it. And when I read that, I thought, ooh, there's something wrong. There's some danger. Something is wrong. Because for some reason, if advertisement is suddenly enabled to do that, money will go away from quality journalism and it will go towards less quality journalism. Still a nice way to put it. So, and I have gathered a couple of points that where I will try to show why this personalized advertising is actually bad for all of us. So, let's go into a very funny example, actually. So, there is somebody who had a new roommate, and the roommate and he, they always do pranks on each other, okay? Practical jokes. And after his roommate had successfully landed a very, very funny and a long-lasting prank, this guy who wrote this article, Brian Switchkoff, he thought about a very mean way to target his roommate with a prank. And what he did was he went to Facebook. He knew his friend was active on Facebook. And we know Facebook knows more about you than you do. And he created an audience for targeting for an advertisement campaign. He called it My Roommate, and it contained a single person, namely his roommate. So now he was able to inject advertisements into his roommate's stream. He writes in the article, that's a side note, that Facebook later changed the rules that you can only target to a minimum of 20 people. But he found a quick fix for that. He targeted 19 women and his roommate, and then he specified that he wants to target only male audiences. So there are very easy ways around this kind of restriction. Now his roommate was a sword swallower and Schwertschlucker, okay? For one of his jobs, he would do these tricks swallowing swords, but he had trouble swallowing pills. And so the first ad he injected into the stream of his friend was trouble swallowing pills. Doesn't it seem ironic that swallowing swords is easy? And then small pills make you gag. And this looked like a genuine advertisement. And his friend was very puzzled. Okay? And so over the couple of weeks, he injected more and more ads, always denying that he had anything to do with it. Okay, some of them were pretty. So, and this is like one of the posts that the friend then wrote. So if you're the kind of coffee-drinking guy who has a black bandana in his pocket, watch me. And the thing is that these are things that Facebook couldn't ever know. But, of course, the roommate knew, so he could write these hyper-targeted ads. And the blue person here is always the target, and Brian Switchkoff, you see, he answers there. So how? I did not post about this. Oh, I only told you and my girlfriend. So either you're fucking with me or Facebook is absolutely eavesdropping on private conversations via my phone. The answer is, well, it's not me or either, your girlfriend. It's marketing. We don't need to focus internet marketing brilliance. Or Facebook is testing some new kind of super creeper feature. Regardless, absolutely hilarious. After 3 weeks, his roommate was absolutely smashed. He came when you talked to him and he didn't know about it before. He would be surprised, and you could see that 3 weeks of hyper-targeted advertising did something to him. So he stopped it. Of course, with an ad, and the reaction by the roommate was a long round of applause. So he was able to appreciate that. So ad tech wants to be personal, and this is the kind of things that ad tech can do, and from time to time also does. So it needs to be tracking based. We need all this tracking for ad tech to be personal. It's called interest-based, it's called relevant advertisement, and don't we all want more relevant advertisement thrown at us? But these really are euphemisms, words that hide what it really is, and it is surveillance. It makes it, a euphemism is a word to make it sound harmless. It relies on tracking people and their interests. It can't exist without tracking people, and the core question is, do we want anybody to have that much information about people? Pranking people is harmless compared to, for example, influencing elections and ballots or creating large rifts through society where we don't speak to each other anymore because we have alienated so much from being targeted with information that pulls us apart. By being personal, of course, it violates privacy. So we know of isolated cases where even advertisement and tracking did something that violated people's privacy. AdTech spies on people, and thus it violates their privacy by spying, and sometimes this comes out, and this is not something that happens as an accident, but this is by design. Never mind that you and your browser app or your app are anonymized, the ads are still for your eyeballs, and correlations can be made, and they are made. And sometimes this backfires. Of course, this is a case that the ad tech industry takes very serious and does nothing then, because it's really it makes advertisement for them. So there's an article that I would recommend you can read if you want to know more about that. That's somebody from the advertisement industry who doesn't like ad tech. I just read the quote and then tell you what it's about. When advertisers try to target users individually, signaling breaks down. I'm going to explain signaling in a minute. Targeting turns an ad into the digital version of a cold call. You know, you pick up your phone and there's somebody calling you where you don't know and who just wants to sell you something, a cold call. Targeted ads tend to burn out the medium in which they appear, through a peak advertising effect. And this is where we all started. Each new targetable medium falls in value and popularity as users figure it out, filter it, or get their governments to restrict it. So what is this signaling? Signaling is one of the core things that advertisement does. It wants us to think, for example, think positively about a brand. So brands are a huge thing in advertisement. We want to, I don't know, love Siemens or Stöbergasse with a B. Or maybe if they would do ads, you would like it more. I don't know. Also, there's a lot of fraud and malvertising that hides behind ad tech. So there's a wonderful researcher who does nothing but research this, and you can later download the slides. I will put them up on SlideShare, and I'm sure the organizers will link them to this talk, and you will find all the references in the slides then. So mobile display fraud. What is mobile display fraud? Mobiles pretending to display something and not doing it. So you have an ad, And this ad, you cannot read that. I can hardly read it. Yeah, a user downloads an app from the official app store, which may look legitimate and have hundreds of positive reviews, which then runs in the background, serving hundreds of ads at a rate as high as 20 ads per minute. Of course, nobody looks at these ads. These ads are just loaded into the phone and create revenue for the person who organizes these ads. And the funny thing is that because it looks like people looked at this ad. Load impressions. So fraud apps load impressions. I'm not going to go into detail here. Especially bad mobile phone apps do a lot of damage here. And there was a report like a year ago, no, 2 years ago, 2015. Oh, that's 3 years ago now. That for the first time showed statistically the damage. $8.2 billion, that's milliarden dollar per year, were just paid by people who wanted to reach somebody with advertising with reaching nobody. But this money was earned by somebody. It was earned by the people who organized that these ads are shown somewhere. And it was earned by the people who organized the fraudulent apps that load these, because of course they are paid. So a small overview, non-human traffic, which means machines looking at the ads and creating the impression that somebody looked at the ad, just computers running and loading ads all the time, clicking them, is about half the damage. Malvertising related activities, which is you serve an ad that actually contains malware, and this is, I'm going to talk about it in a minute, and infringed content is you serve an ad that doesn't belong to you. And of course, ad tech is not only full of fraud, but it's a vector for malware. So we know that if we cannot have control over which advertisement shows up in our media, we cannot know what it contains. And there have been many waves of bad advertisements containing malware, containing links to phishing sites and so on, that were distributed to high-value sites like Wall Street Journal or Guardian, and we know about these. So these cases are documented. They are not just hearsay or something. The researcher mentioned before, he has written a lot about that, and the link goes to his SlideShare page, and he has like 30 different presentations thoroughly documenting what kind of damage is done here. So in case you're doing advertisement, you think that's a good idea to do targeted advertising, think again. Many of the views you're going to get and that you pay for will be fraudulent. The next thing is that we have heard about this, I will put the cookies on your, I will put the ads in your site and the cookies, and then I track people, and then I know where they else go, and then I put the advertisement there because it's cheaper. But what is there? I said lesser quality journalism, but what it really had done, and we all know this effect, is cheaper journalism, less quality journalism today is written in a way that makes us click and makes us read it and look at it. So you all know the real reason why something is. It doesn't say the real reason in the headline, but it once used to say the real reason. But it doesn't anymore, because they don't want you to know the reason. They are not there to tell you something. And if you're interested, you read the article. They just want you to click and go there. And that's a large part of the World Wide Web. Consists in, by now, by these headlines that are just made to make you click, load the advertisement, and then see that it's really not that interesting and go away again. That's just to make you look at ads and track, of course. And you can find online help in writing these headlines, how to write attention-grabbing headlines that people will click through on. But that's not what journalism is about. Journalism is not about attention-grabbing headlines that people will click through on. This is really, so this is bad. This is bad for quality journalism. This creates multiple levels of bad journalism on top of quality journalism. And once, as we said, the tracking has worked on the quality journalism sites, the the advertisement goes away. This is I could show you a graph that shows the money that goes away from good journalism. So this is exactly what Walt Mossberg described here. Ad tech incentivizes publications to prioritize content generation over journalism. It's very easy to do that, and you could actually earn money with it if you wanted. You read tech news, you create a better headline, you write a site where you put just the headline and a link to the original article plus advertisement, and you will earn money. And this is bad, because this is not how it should work. The next thing is that with this advertisement and ad tech creating lower quality layers of journalism on top of good journalism, it of course also opens the door for writing just nonsense and earning money with it. And we know that has happened. So ad tech gives fake news a business model, because fake news is easier to produce than the real kind. And ad tech will pay anybody if he gets eyeballs. There's this famous case of, the Macedonian fake news complex. You might have heard about that. Before Trump, the election that brought Trump into presidency, there was hordes of Macedonian teenagers who understood that. They created fake news. They created fake news that people wanted to see because they believed in some kind of conspiracies going on. I don't know, some FBI agent went to visit Hillary Clinton and was never seen again because he was killed. And they write these articles. They learn pretty good English for that. They take stock photos. That's often how you identify these articles. And they put ads in it. And then they use Facebook like as a slingshot to put that into the correct bubbles, and it multiplies beyond belief. They earned good money. And I can only again point you to this article, a Wired article that is quite new, that has thoroughly looked into the thing. So Facebook money. And the thing is that here, this is really where Facebook has to own up, because of course it was in Facebook's interest to do that. They also earned crazy amounts of monies from this. So, and going back, there are other cases, not only the American election, the last American election, but of course also like Myanmar during a crisis, and they just accelerated hate speech. And the only reason this happens is because people can earn money with it. Okay. Ad tech relies on deception because it's not advertising, and that's one of the things that we have to stop talking about. When you see advertisement on websites, these are not advertisements. They are direct marketing. They are like the crappy pieces of paper that you find in your mailbox in the afternoon when you come home, where somebody believes that you are in the right group of people to receive this one sheet of paper. Spam, junk mail. You get a letter addressed to you containing some, they ask for money or whatever because they think you're the right group. And you could do this, you can do the same thing with ad tech, but on a much higher level, on a much more refined level. And we have seen that. So we have seen it in the example where the guy pranked his roommate, but we have also seen it in the American election and in the Brexit, where people were targeted to change their opinion or to not go voting, for example, because we have also seen that a low participation in elections usually means that the right-wing interests have majorities. So it looks like advertising, and it's called advertising, but it's bullshit. It's direct marketing. It's a cousin of junk mail. And because of that misdirection, brands and even good brands think they are placing ads everywhere when they are not. They are targeting people with very subtle psychological manipulation campaigns. Finally, ad tech is really ugly. It messes sites up. I've never seen beautiful banner ads. or one that I really wanted to look at. When you compare it to the best of advertisement that we have outside of targeted advertising, there are like worlds between. And these are the reasons why ad tech has led to the biggest boycott in human history. Never in human history has something been boycotted so much as advertisement. And it has been done by installing ad blockers. Many of you probably have installed ad blockers. And you're participating in a boycott against ad tech, and that's good. Ad tech, of course, fights back and tries to get around the ad blockers. More than 1.7 billion people, so that's like a fourth or fifth of the human population, boycotts online marketing, targeted marketing. And to round it up, maybe just to get to the point, what can we do? I have a quote from a book, Bad Man, about that there's a reason why we call it surveillance capitalism. And the reason is that, let me just read that, we were taught to fear totalitarian governments. We feared that they would know everything about us, follow us everywhere, know who they were talking to and what they were saying, and keep secret files about us, which could be used to influence our lives in ways that were only vaguely visible to us. And of course, when you look back in history, there are states that did this. But today's states don't do that anymore. Today, industry does that, and we let them do it. And this is surprising, because not only do we let them collect this data, we let them sell the powers to manipulate people to everybody. And we have seen the effects of selling it to people from political sides, what this does to society. So this is where I think we should really be wary of targeted advertising and ad tech. And this brings me back to the value of advertisement. Because there is value in quality advertisement, in not non-tracking advertisement. There is something like a mutual benefit between good media, quality media, and non-tracking advertisement. Because in a way, non-tracking advertisement tries to target people too. I don't know, Mercedes might put an ad in The Guardian or The Standard in quality media, while some lower quality car brand, Skoda, I don't know, puts their cheaper cars, they put their ads in Kronenzeitung or Kurier. This makes sense, but it has another effect, that these two benefit from each other. So when Mercedes puts the ad in the Standard gets money, but Mercedes benefits from the perception of quality that we have of the Standard. Kronenzeitung is widely spread. Many people read Kronenzeitung. I don't, but who cares? But maybe I'm not the target group for a Skoda. So again, there's a win-win situation here. And quality or non-targeted advertisement pays for a lot of things that were impossible otherwise, like events, activities, sports. A lot of sports is financed by non-targeting ads. If we get the ad industry to see only, if you get people who want to make ads to think that the only possible good way of advertisement is tracking advertisement, this all goes away. And we've seen quality media, at least in the USA, get in huge trouble because they don't earn enough from traditional advertisement. On the other hand, we have ad tech. And ad tech does the opposite because it is quality, it's equally efficient with bad content, fake content, wrong content, and fraud. It destroys quality content. And it ultimately destroys brand, because who wants to be associated with, I don't know, a site that spreads only lies? If this is only what's left over because everything else cannot be financed, then ads will go away. Because without quality content, it's really hard to become a premium brand. No known brand in the world has ever received or built a positive reputation through ad tech. All brand value comes from traditional advertisement. Wherever ad tech can follow you, it will, and it will be on every imaginable device that you will have or that you already have. And if we do not stop it, then we will be in trouble, and we should. So what can we do to stop it? Let's just build a menace here a little bit. So we should stop it. So number one is, of course, install ad blockers. We all should do that. And we should not only do it for ourselves, consistently on all devices, and try to find the good ad blockers and not the one that secretly clicked the ads while we look at ad-free content so that the fraudulent industry earns money. We should also tell other people about installing ad trackers, because as a society, we would benefit from getting rid of tracking advertisement on the internet. We should deconfigure tracking. Now, I cannot tell you how to deconfigure tracking on every device you have, but usually devices have ways to switch off tracking. For example, the phone I have, you click on privacy, you get the privacy settings, you click on advertisement, and for some reason, limit ad tracking is off when you get the device, when you freshly install a new version. So go there and switch it on, and then the device will generate a new identification number every so often and limit the amount of tracking that is possible while you use apps. So, and you can deconfigure tracking on all kinds of machines. You can deconfigure tracking on Firefox. You can switch off third-party cookies. Third-party cookies are almost exclusively used for tracking, and you have no harm from switching them off. If you know that pages have tracking rich, are full of trackers, just use private mode for your browser. Of course, the site still knows it's you via your IP address, for example. But there are ways around that, maybe also. The IP address is not given to all the trackers there. The trackers only can do cookies. So using private mode is a huge step forward. For example, if you know that you can only read their standard, if you either accept tracking or pay, you can use private mode. Then you accept tracking, but tracking goes away when you close the window. And you can use the standard. Only drawback, whenever you come to an article, you have to click the I'm okay with tracking button. But what you should really do is, of course, pay for the tracking-free version. So you can use the standard without, they call it zustimmungspflichtige cookies, but it's really without all the tracking that goes on, without feeding the giant your data. And the giant has nothing good in his mind for us. The giant is only interested, and the giant is this tracking industry, is only interested in separating us from our money as good as they can. So pay for quality media, pay for quality services, pay for quality apps. You know that you can get rid of advertisement in most apps if you use them. And it's not a little nuisance of having a centimeter of your screen dedicated to advertisement. When you get rid of advertisement, you will not be tracked by advertisement. And this is something that we as a society have to do. Because free, in many cases, means that we feed the tracker industry. And this is, as I hoped I've shown, a little bit dangerous. So with free services, ask yourself what the business model is. That's another step. It could be academic interest, which is usually nice and harmless. It could be philanthropy, such as open source, which is good. It could be paid by the tracking industry, which is bad. It could be financed by another part of the company, which is questionable sometimes. They get you into your ecosystem. But sometimes it's okay. And sometimes it's not okay. One more thing is to support lawmakers. So GDPR is a huge step in the right direction to get rid of that. Unfortunately, most companies who do tracking just do not care about the GDPR. They invented lengthy pieces of text and incredibly arcane ways. I showed you one, which you should have to go through to get rid of tracking, and nobody does that. But once people start complaining about these sites, they will see that they're actually not allowed to do that. And the next regulation is around the corner, which is e-privacy regulation, which would make them huge difficulties. With e-privacy regulation, it is more or less impossible to track you without your explicit and outspoken consent. One more thing is to educate friends and family. We all know that I mean, you are from NHTL, so you probably have superior technology knowledge to everybody else in your family and most of your friends. You should educate them. You should tell them. And in order to enable you to do that, I'm going to do something that is not good for my reputation. I'm going to show you the one page where most of what I told you today is actually written down and can be followed with links, and you can read more about it. And it's this one. So it's also going to be in the slides. You can take a picture now if you want. You can read this. This is the best deconstruction of targeted advertisement industry that I have found and the best collection of arguments against it. So, ad blocking is the largest boycott in mankind's history, and I think it's a good boycott, and we should continue with it. So I call to you to boycott ads. Thank you very much.
Vielen, vielen Dank. Toller Einstieg in den heutigen Tag. Gibt es Fragen von eurer Seite? Wir haben hier eine Frage und auch einen sogenannten Mikrofonengel. Bei uns heißen die Damen und Herren, die Jungs und Mädels, die hier rumrennen, alle Engel, weil sie so quasi hilfreich sind wie Engel, bitte.
Englisch, German?
Deutsch ist gerne okay. Deutsch, ja.
Ja, ja. Okay. Ich wollte eigentlich nur fragen, für mich ist Werbung allgemein fragwürdig. Jetzt natürlich die Tracking-Geschichte ist eindeutig, aber wenn man argumentiert, dass die Werbung teilweise Qualitätsmedien finanziert, hat man das gleiche Problem wie zum Beispiel bei anderen Dingen wie beim Film aus Ernährung, wenn man die Nahrungskette verlängert, wird mehr und mehr Ressourcen gebraucht, weil inzwischen was verloren geht. Ebenso auch natürlich, wenn man die Werbemaschinerie dazwischen schaltet. Man könnte natürlich genauso gut sagen, ich bezahle den Standard oder was auch immer direkt und dann ist es noch effizienter. Also ich würde das nur noch herausstreichen.
Ich habe auch das am Anfang explizit ausgenommen. Ich rede nicht über den Wert von Werbung als etwas Gesellschaftliches. Ich sehe in dem Wirtschaftssystem, das wir jetzt haben, einen Wert für Werbung darin, dass viele Dinge finanziert werden und möglich werden, die sonst nicht passieren würden. Oder wo wir vollkommen andere Modelle finden müssten, wie sie möglich werden können. Ja. Und insofern, glaube ich, tun wir uns schwer, jetzt zu sagen, hören wir mit der Werbung auf. Ich weiß nicht, Sao Paulo, eine Stadt in Brasilien, hatte vor ein paar Jahren einen Riesenstreit darüber, wie viel Werbung im öffentlichen Raum kosten soll. Mhm. Und der Streit hat mit einer Deadline geendet, wo das Gesetz hätte überarbeitet werden müssen. Es gab keine überarbeitete Version und es gab plötzlich keine Berechtigung mehr, Werbung im öffentlichen Raum zu haben. Ja. Sao Paulo ist eine werbefreie Stadt. Wenn Sie dorthin kommen, es gibt kein einziges Werbeplakat und die Menge an Branding, die ein Geschäft haben darf, ist stark begrenzt.
Es hat nicht dazu geführt, dass Sao Paulo sich in Luft auflöst
oder nicht mehr existiert oder die Menschen auswandern. Es hat interessante andere Seiteneffekte. Nicht? Zum Beispiel hat man so riesige Werbewände von Häusern abmontiert und dort dahinter Elendsquartiere gefunden, wo irgendwelche Fabriken ihre Arbeiter so 3 Personen pro Bett mäßig untergebracht hatten und die einfach unsichtbar waren durch diese verwerbten Fronten, nicht, die haben doppelt verdient. Und insofern gab es da sehr viele positive Effekte. Jetzt, ich bin da auch ein bisschen lopsided, sage ich, weil ich diese Geschichte in einem Magazin gelesen habe, das 100% Gegenwerbung ist, das Adbuster. Und ich finde das auch sehr sympathisch. Ich glaube trotzdem, wir müssen darüber nachdenken, wie wir miteinander auskommen. Aber ja, das ist kein wichtiger Schlusssatz. Gut, so.
Weitere Fragen? Ja, was mich eben interessieren würde, war genau in diese Richtung, können wir das Ding irgendwie noch fixen? Ne? Denn auch wenn man, wie du ja so schön im Vortrag drinnen gehabt hast, die Punkte, dass der Qualitätsjournalismus unter dem Clickbait leidet und sich natürlich auch dann daran irgendwie orientiert, kriegt man das raus? Denn ich sehe trotzdem, oder wir beide wissen das ja, die Bemühungen, besonders der Qualitätsmedien über Bezahlmodelle, die funktionieren halt relativ schlecht.
Ja. Ah ja, wir haben ein Problem damit, dass alles über den Haufen fliegt gerade, natürlich. Ja. Und ich glaube aber, dass wir einen guten Teil dieser Probleme in den Griff kriegen, wenn wir diese Tracking-Geschichten einfach untersagen. Ja. Das ist eine Seite. Eine andere Seite wäre, radikale Transparenz zu schaffen. Ja. Ich könnte mir vorstellen, dass wir Gesetze erlassen, die es mir ermöglichen, zu jedem Stück Information, das auf einer Seite ist, schauen zu dürfen, warum es dort ist. Ja? Zu jedem Werbeeinschaltung kann ich klicken und sehe die Kriterien, nach denen es dort platziert wurde. Ja? Google-Suchergebnisse-Ranking ist eine andere Geschichte, über die man wahrscheinlich auch einen ganzen Vortrag halten könnte. Ja? Eigentlich wüsste ich gern, warum dieser Link für mich ganz oben ist und für dich nicht. Ja? Weil so ist es. Ja? Sie können das mal probieren, es ist eine spannende Geschichte. Setzen sich in ihrer, ich habe verstanden, die meisten von Ihnen sind Schüler in einer Klasse und Schülerinnen. Nehmen Sie sich Ihre eigenen Computer oder Ihre Smartphones und suchen Sie alle nach demselben, ein bisschen außergewöhnlichen Suchbegriff in Google und schauen Sie, ob Sie alle dieselben Suchergebnisse haben. Und Sie werden feststellen, da gibt es Abweichungen. Ja? Wenn Sie sich damit beschäftigen, dann werden Sie andere Ergebnisse bekommen als Sie, die das zum allerersten Mal suchen. Und eigentlich wüsste ich gern, warum das so ist. Ja? Ich hätte gern das Recht, das zu erfahren. Ja. Und ich glaube, das wäre so ein Weg, wo wir hingehen können. Unglücklicherweise, muss ich jetzt noch dazu sagen, in Österreich arbeitet man gerade gegen diese Dinge. Nicht? Österreich arbeitet aktiv daran, die E-Privacy-Direktive zu untergraben. Ja. Das ist ganz entsetzlich.
Die wird eh der nächste große spannende Wurf nach der DSGVO.
Genau, falls sie noch fertig wird vor der Wahl.
Der zittert in Wahrheit die IT-Industrie ja viel mehr.
Ja, aber momentan wird abgegraben.
Genau in diese Richtung geht, dass viel mehr reguliert werden soll dieser Hinsicht. Bei der Transparenz bin ich ein wenig skeptisch. Ich verstehe die Überlegung dahinter, aber jetzt auch meine subjektive Wahrnehmung ist, dass Transparenz ist wichtig, da rennst du mir offene Türen ein, aber ich bin mir nicht sicher, ob sich die Menschen unterm Strich auch wirklich dafür interessieren und ob es deshalb wahnsinnig viel ändern wird. Wenn du den Bereich ansiehst, Facebook-Ads, du kannst, durch die DSGVO kam diese Änderung bei Facebook, hast du heute die Möglichkeit, bei einer Facebook-Fanpage nachzuschauen, ob diese Fanpage Werbung schaltet und ganz grob die Targeting-Kriterien anzusehen und eben zu schauen, welche Werbung geschaltet wird. Das ist ein Schritt in Richtung Transparenz, den man einfach begrüßen muss. Ich bin mir nicht sicher, ob es die Leute unterm Strich wirklich interessiert. So wie halt auch keine Auskunftsbegehren gestellt werden, dass ihr auch dazu beitragen würde, dass mehr Druck auf die Industrie passiert. Ich fürchte, wir werden noch die eine oder andere Privacy Week dazu benötigen, um hier Media Literacy voranzutreiben, oder?
Ja, wobei ich sage, dieses Argument hört man von allen Seiten. Das hört man auch von der anderen Seite. Und wenn die andere Seite sagt, das interessiert ja eigentlich niemand, dann wäre ich skeptisch und sage, probieren wir nochmal aus, vielleicht sind die Leute doch interessiert. Und ich glaube, wenn wir es nicht schaffen, dieses Tracking komplett zu beenden, ja, dann brauchen wir einen Weg, wie wir als Gesellschaft dazu lernen können, wie wir uns dagegen wehren, so manipuliert zu werden. Und wenn wir als Gesellschaft dazu lernen wollen, dann muss so eine Transparenz her, sonst sind wir chancenlos. Ne? Und dann kann man das in die Schule mitnehmen und kann sagen, Medienschulung, davon wird jetzt eh geredet, ne? Dass man irgendwie Digital Literacies oder so lernt. Ja. Ich weiß, sie lachen alle, ja. Aber und das wäre dann durchaus ein interessantes Thema, dem man Zeit widmen kann, sich damit auseinanderzusetzen.
Peter, vielen, vielen Dank. Nochmal einen kräftigen Applaus für den Peter Burgerthofer.
Danke auch.
Wunderbar, schöner Anfang.